G'day, beautiful people, boys and girls. Edward Wilson here, your host of Gaberhood. I have an exciting episode 16 for you. It is again with Charlie Allen as I invite him to interview me in reverse. Woo-wee, Rick. We're going down a wormhole, I guess. Cool. That's about all the self-promotion I can think of. So, if you liked the last one, you'll probably like this one too. And if you've been thinking, I want Ed to talk about Ed's self sometime, well, then your dreams are coming true today. With no further ado, I present you me and Charlie Allen. Hi. Live, raw, unscripted. What's going on, Charlie? What are we doing today?
Well, today, we are going to flip the script a little bit, and we are going to put you in the hot seat.
Ooh!
That's right. It's
how exciting. Do you mean I finally get to learn about me and talk about me? Finally.
After all these years of selfless service, you finally get to be just front and center. Staring into your soul and drinking it all in.
Oof. Well, listening to my soul and hearing it all in.
Beautiful. Perfect.
Very nice. Well, thank you, Charlie, very much for agreeing to, or suggesting almost, and then agreeing to do a reverse interview where you're going to basically go through whatever questions you've cooked up for me and perhaps take a few from my usual list and create a show for everyone to enjoy. I'm a gay man after all.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So you fit right in.
I just remembered you said you emailed me the questions, but I have not looked. So I've been busy. We'll have to see we go.
I figured you might be. Yes. So there is a mix here in my lineup. Uh-huh. I do have a few questions that I've selected from your usual list and a few that I have put on the table myself. So we'll just dive right in.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah. Well, my basics are I'm 34 years old. I'm not good at giving up power.
Okay, I see. Fun facts.
I'm 34 years old. I live in Melbourne with my partner of almost 10 years, Alex. I have been a gay men's life coach for 5 years running Brown Bear Coaching. I've been running this podcast for, I don't know its birthday actually, maybe roughly 18 months, 2 years perhaps. Episode 16, here we go. And yeah, I published a book called A Gay Man Book. You all know about it. You all listen. This isn't your first episode, right? Could be though.
Yes. Well, as to plug your book for a moment, I did purchase it and it arrived a few weeks ago. And I was able to go through it, and I loved it. Hooray. Very much. So, yeah, so I'd just like to encourage anyone out there who hasn't purchased it yet, you're missing out. It's a fantastic collection of art and sentiments and just a reminder of just the stories that kind of bind us all together. So as gay men, I think you'll enjoy. I think even if you are not a gay man, I think you'd still enjoy it. Just to, yeah. So an invitation to any of your listeners. I'm acting like this is my show
today. Well, it is today. It is today. And maybe it will be in the future. Who knows? But it definitely is today.
Perfect. Then I will take complete ownership of that. Love that.
Thanks, Charlie.
Okay. For all of my listeners out there tonight.
We'll have to talk about a commission later, I guess.
Yes. Okay. My rates are very high. But
oh, dear.
I'm sure.
This is going to be a problem.
Fine print, you know, we could talk about those details at another time.
Cool.
So I one thing that I would love to hear a little bit more from you about is what was the process for you? How did you become a coach? How did you start on this journey of Brown Bear Coaching? What made you decide to go for it? What was sort of like the events that led you to say, you know what, this is something that I want to be part of, this is important to me, and here's how I'm going to go about making this come true.
Yep. So thank you for asking. A point in my life about 5 years ago, something that had been an ongoing issue in my life was recurring, and it had begun annoying me and really hurting me in a way that it hadn't been before. Just some personal stuff, but what I was experiencing was kind of a kind of slow breaking down. Like, I couldn't handle what was going on anymore. And I'd put it on the back burner. I'd put on a brave face. I'd done the quote unquote right things. I was pushing, striving to make everything work. Work life, we'd moved interstate to have an adventure. But these things were tormenting me and plaguing me, and it was kicking off inside of me, you might say insecurities, but like internal problems. It's been a long time since then, and the way I define them now will sound very different to the way I defined them then. But essentially, I was very in my head, and my little in my head demons were chasing me around going, this isn't right, this isn't okay, this isn't acceptable. Be careful. Think about this. What about this? What about this? What if that happens? What if that happens? And I got a big old lovable, intelligent brain that helped me win all my tests, or almost all of them, in primary school. And then I became a lazy, but high achieving high schooler because I think I am endowed with a kind of, I don't know, whatever that form of smarts is. I got a fair whack of it. But the downside of that, as I've observed in myself and in others, is that it can turn around and hurt you. I was very in my head. So I Googled my symptoms and my conditions and my situation, and I looked for self-help content. There were some wonderful YouTubes that I came across. I guess it was mostly YouTube at that point. And I also sought out my own psychologist. But while I was waiting for that appointment to arrive, I just kept Googling things, and I came across content that kept being referred to as coaching. So there was a thing called NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, that people seemed pretty hot on, and there was a 40-minute explainer video that was an eyeball into a classroom where a live teaching was taking place. And I was like, oh, I've not really seen stuff like this before. What, I'm so skeptical, like, what is this? This seems strange and different and new. But I was very interested. And the concepts they presented at first, I was like, okay, a little wacky, but then they'd explain it. And then I would kind of explore it for myself. And I was like, oh, that seems eminently sensible and practical. Oh, that actually really helps me. And there were some very key things, like, no one of us is the center of the universe. Sometimes we can get so, you know, we put ourselves under a microscope and we analyze ourselves and our own personal individual lives to the nth degree, and it begins to hurt. But I don't think it's quite natural or fair to say that it's true that we're the center of the universe or that we're all that important. So realizing and practicing, I am not the center of the universe, I don't need to be so serious and so intense about all of this, was extremely helpful. I very quickly identified, I was like, oh, not only do I like this content, I'm like, this kind of feels like something that feels right. I might like to practice this. And obviously I said, well, I got to sort myself out first and I've got to learn and investigate further, but this is really tickling me. And so for about 6 months, I was umming and ahhing and researching and looking into it. And I was calling different active life coaches that I'd Googled in the Sydney area and just saying, hey, can I just talk to you for 5 minutes? I want to know what your job is like and what you do and how you find it and what you did and how you learnt it and what are your clients like and what are the outcomes? Because I was very serious about making sure that this was a very legitimate, helpful business that it seemed to promise to be, or an activity, you might say. Well, it's both. And a lot of, well, two people in particular, I had lovely long conversations with them. They were happy to talk to me. One of them, I eventually brought her on as my own personal coach, and I said to her simultaneously, I kind of want to learn and explore how to do this well. She'd been around and she'd been in the game 10 years. She was from my hometown, Perth, and yeah, we started doing remote sessions, and she recommended that I do a certificate 4 from an accredited Australian institution, the same one that she did it from. And I do recommend it. If someone wants to study life coaching, the Australian, it's like, because it has two acronyms, one's for the counseling side and one's for the coaching side, but it's like the Australian Institute of Life Coaching, it was actually really good. It reminded me a lot of university. The readings were really tight. They came from well-sourced, peer-reviewed sources. And it was just really good stuff. There was a bunch of tests, exams. And I thought, Yeah, geez, now I'm staring down the barrel of changing my career, which had been a bit bumpy at the time. I'd been in sales for a very long time, but I thought, yeah, now would be a great time to change, because I'd spent 1 year busting my guts trying to sell a product that no one wanted to buy, and that was dramatic and difficult. It's the first year in my sales career I'd ever not achieved my targets. I was a bit of a high performer until then, but I chose not to blame myself. My manager, if you're listening, I feel that he did choose to blame me, but good for you, mate.
No hard feelings.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. Slightly hard feelings, but not overly so. I'm a life coach. I let things go.
That's true. But you're human. You're allowed to be exactly where you're at.
Yes, thank you very much. But yeah, I don't begrudge him or hold it against him or anything, but that did happen. And then I thought to myself, you know what? If this is legit and I can help people, this feels like something that I've felt for a very long time. When I was in year 8 going into high school, they got us to make these little time capsule things that you'd write the answers on and then bury and get them out in year 12. I said that I liked Rebecca. Shout out, Rebecca. She listens to all my things. No, she doesn't. I don't know what she's doing.
She's somewhere in the world. We think well of her.
She's around.
Sending her good thoughts.
I always loved about her that she just seemed like, you know, she seemed just calm and in control. She just got it together and she just followed her own interests and didn't apologize. That's a lot of admirable traits and qualities in a person like that for me. And I wrote down, I really sat with the question, what do you want to be when you're older? Because I'd had tons of silly answers as a child, like stockbroker, fireman, blah, blah, blah.
Stockbroker.
Cute, right? Yeah, well, my dad.
As a child?
Yeah, well, my dad likes personal finance and investing, but now he's huge on energy, renewable energy, solar power and stuff. He gets really into it. So he would share that a lot with us as kids. And so I took an interest and I thought I knew what stockbroking was. I had no idea. I wrote down, I want to help people. That was the most intense and true thing that I could find when I really contemplated that question. And then when coaching came along, I was like, oh, geez, this feels like I'm connecting back with that. And if this actually works, because it seems to be working for me, if I could make this happen, this feels ideal for me. It's just this a feeling that just washed over me. I checked with my friends. None of them were supportive. Checked with my family. Lukewarm. Mostly everyone was just concerned. They're like, man, life coaching, isn't that just like an unqualified psychologist pretending to be a psychologist? And my rational, logical, what's the other word where you question things?
Critical
brain. Yeah, fair enough. Was in 100% agreement. And that's why I did so much research and so much checking and checking and talking to people and verifying. And every time, well, I'm not going to say every stone I unturned, I found good stuff. I found some smelly, bad people too. There are definitely charlatans and less than valuable, in my opinion, coaches offering overpriced services for questionable results. But I found a lot of real practice and real good results and solid stuff in there. So I thought, all right, cool. I'm going to do this anyway, and everyone else can catch up when I prove how great I am and how great it is. I'm that kind of confident, bordering on arrogant, kind of a go-getter. So,
I mean, you believe in yourself strongly, though. And I think that's something we can all kind of learn from.
Can you learn from it? That's a legit question I have. Can you learn from I watch a lot of like RuPaul's Drag Race, not necessarily because I love drag. Drag's great. Mm-hmm. Love it. Just going to say love it, but casually. I'm not intensely in love with it, but I actually love it for the display of a couple of things. RuPaul as like guru. RuPaul is a guru. He, she, they, big into feeling the vibe and the energy, and you got to go with life. And you'll see that he kind of is like coaching queens on the show, but also off the show on the podcast and in different books and his masterclass. There's an app called Masterclass. You can watch it about becoming yourself, being yourself, like delivering yourself to the world. I love all that stuff from him. And the show itself is about showing how to open up, overcome the bits in the way to deliver what you have to give. And these magical, strange creatures we call drag queens are just particularly unique, fascinating beings. So, yeah, don't know why I was talking about RuPaul's, but
I think, well, you asked if we could learn from the examples of confidence. Yeah.
Well, if, because it just feels different to traditional learning, right? Just because I'm confident doesn't mean that is going to make anybody else confident. But I think by osmosis or just smelling someone's example, you could be like, oh, that's how they demonstrate themselves. That's how they show their confidence. Maybe it does kind of translate to where, okay, wait, does mine feel like that? Is that how I would do myself? So I guess that's useful.
I think so.
Lots of examples of confidence. Yeah, probably do translate into we can learn confidence, but it's not like you can do a test on it, you know?
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, if nothing else, even if that particular example, like you were talking about drag queens, I have been told by some people that I would really enjoy drag, to perform drag, which is something that I don't understand where that comes from, why people say that, because I don't see that in myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that I do kind of think about in the line of this conversation, the modeling of embracing one's selfhood and trying things out,
it's
and
crazy
putting
powerful.
On. Exactly. I think even if one's expression of power isn't necessarily identical to something that feels genuine for me or natural for me, I think it is a learning experience inviting me into what does it look like to be okay with showing up? What does it look like to be okay with trying a new thing? I think, I don't know, even if I necessarily don't want to be a drag queen or a drag performer, I think understanding, looking at someone else be confident invites me into an imagination space of what does it look like for me to be confident and to just believe in myself? Where are the spaces I'm in?
Yeah.
And how can I, even if it is a performance at first, I think maybe that's one of the powerful things about the performance itself is because you are stepping into it as a performance, there's a certain element of it where you feel as though you are not really risking yourself in that moment.
Yeah.
There's a protection in the performance element that allows you to try on the confidence.
Yes.
And then as that familiarizes, as you familiarize yourself with it, you can translate that experience and the permission that you have given yourself or that you feel extended toward you into another space that does feel more in alignment with who you are and what you want to express in your own space.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Guru says that one day his therapist said, you know, you have access to that power out of drag. And it like clicked in his soul. And he's like, oh, I get it now. And so now he feels powerful all the time.
Love that. Can you imagine feeling powerful all the time the way RuPaul does? I don't know if I have enough space in my being to contain that much power.
It depends what one means by power, but can I be my confident borderline arrogant self for a second? I can. In my own subtle way, I do live that way, if I may say so. I'm not always extremely authentic. I'm nowhere near as TV worthy as RuPaul and all the fabulous creatures that appear, in my own opinion. But yeah, I don't doubt and question myself anymore. But I don't have to show up and perform and deliver anything. I'm not pushing myself in that direction. So my personal confidence and feelings of power don't present themselves in that way. But yeah. I actually think I'm a successful coach in large part due to that, as well as anything else.
I think that's fantastic, though.
Mm.
I love that.
Good for me, right?
Honestly, yes.
Thank you.
You put that on and take it all the way.
Well, the cultivation over the last almost 5 years now of coaching, of a confidence and comfort in this kind of one-to-one private, it's not even private, it's going to be public, but, you know, semi-private, personal intercommunication, that's actually where my confidence shows up in a big way sometimes. Sometimes I just wish I could record those private sessions and broadcast them to the world, because some of them are so profound and so beautiful and so human and so normal that I want everyone to hear them, because there's just real humanity playing out. Bit of wisdom, not necessarily my wisdom, might have learnt it somewhere, but certainly I've done the learning, so now I do the sharing.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
Do you ever get permission to share some of those sessions or portions of them? Or have you never done that before at all?
There was one client who I did work with, shout out to you if you're listening. We agreed up front that we would record every single session because I was very interested in this concept, and I charged him just $100, which is a fraction of my full price. We recorded all of those sessions. However, it would take a lot of editing to pull the nuggets out of it. This gentleman achieved, as far as I can tell, I haven't caught up with him lately, but basically everything, I would say 95% of all the things I would hope for anyone doing coaching to achieve. I would want to check in with them though, because I wasn't 100% sold. Sometimes I'm 100% sold on my clients' quote unquote completeness. But 95% is still pretty bloody damn good in all the things that I promise, such as the ending of all problems. It's a big thing to throw out there. But it's very real. And so he achieved 95%. But I think he was actually either very self-conscious of being recorded and couldn't quite ever get through that. But we were very wordy. There was a lot of pauses. I'm seldom, if ever, pushy as a coach. Mm-hmm. But there were several times it was required. I'm like, but what you're saying doesn't add up. You see that, right? And then it gets to this funny line where it's like, I'm very conscious of ever gaslighting or suggesting something to somebody. That is not my job. It is a big no-no. You should definitely never be giving people, this is what is true, or think like this, or do like this, or this is right, or that is wrong. That is never, ever, ever a coach's job. But when the person keeps repeating the same answers that aren't congruous, you got to just keep going, but that thing that you keep saying, right, that, do you see how that doesn't line up? And they'll argue, no, it does. There's solid like 15-minute sections of that where it's not the most condensed, perhaps easy to consume audio of client sessions. At least that's the way I think about it now. But the fact that we got 95% of it done means that the good stuff is in there. I guess I'm self-conscious of how he was a bit of an outlier in that I found myself having to be very strong to move the coaching forward for whatever reason. And so I don't feel as if it is representative enough of what an average coaching interaction looks like. I don't want to give people the wrong idea. And there's a lot of beautiful, sensitive, timid guys out there who want a safe space. Incredibly important that I earn people's trust and that they feel safe, secure. And I'm not sure that putting that audio out there is gonna help them.
Fair enough.
It does exist. One of my clients actually asked the very first session, he's an Australian, if he could record me just to play it back for himself later. I find a lot of my clients are big fans of note-taking and lots of cerebral activity. Not surprising, it's the same problem occurring. But I forgot that he was ever recording it. I disclosed some very personal things to him in private and in confidence. And at session 10, I was like, oh man, what did I end up saying? Because you've just reminded me that you recorded all of these. I was like, one day, let's go back. One day, let's mine this for nuggets. I definitely know that, I know for certain that he captured some of the real stuff that I'd love to publish. I just have to take a quick sweep over it that I'm not exposing myself too much too early to people I don't know, because not everything that's said in private is for public consumption.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it could be done. And I look forward to doing it when I've got the time and bandwidth to do so.
Well, I will be one of the eager listeners to hear how.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think it would be a brilliant tool not only for people to help themselves, but also a brilliant tool potentially for anyone considering becoming a coach. You could look at Brown Bear Coaching and my execution and go, is this the kind of coach I want to be? Does this resonate with me? Is this a helping profession I could, work out for myself?
It's a good question. Going back to something that you said earlier when you were talking about he's achieved 90%.
Oh, yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, or maybe 10 to 100%, let's say, whichever one tickles your fancy.
Yeah.
Where would you say that you land personally as far as achieving what you want to, either as a coach or in your own life?
So just to clarify the question, is it about achieving what I want, or is it about achieving the outcomes that I hope that any coachee achieves?
You personally, for your own self, your own life.
Okay, so at this very point in my life, how satisfied am I with what I've achieved, or have I achieved everything I want to?
Yes.
Ooh, okay. This is a super tough question because your kind of desires and goalposts shift magically over time, day by day. You know, once you've helped 10 people, you want to help 100, or at least that I continue to be deeply invested in wanting to do one-to-one coaching as a transformative activity. I suspect I will want to do that until I die. It won't even be about money eventually. I'll be an old man and I'll be like, I'm the village elder man. Come to me for some wisdom. Maybe. Something like that. I can imagine myself really enjoying that. So where I'm at now and how I live is a continuing rolling process of, as soon as something new or exciting comes up within me, like falls into my radar, I become aware of it, I will assess whether or not I have the time, resources, space, etc. to pursue it. If I didn't have to work and money wasn't a thing, I definitely would be pursuing other things and interests, and who knows what I would achieve. I don't know. Am I satisfied with myself and where I'm at and how I'm living and what I'm doing? 100%. If it was 99%, I would grab that 1%, choke it, throw it on the floor, and tell me to take me to its leader, and like I would go get that done. That's kind of just how I roll. I have given up on the pursuit of fabulous wealth as a meaningful exploit of my life. No way. That is not profoundly meaningful to me. Does that mean that I don't want to become perhaps I think my sweet spot would be like 4 to 5 times minimum wage, I guess. So it's relatively rich, but being any more rich than that kind of holds no meaning. So I really wouldn't care. I really do feel as if I truly, really wouldn't care. Like just having a dog would be more important than that. Just having a better relationship with my partner would be better than that. Going to beaches, preferably nudist beaches, I like them, is more important than all of that money to me. And I suspect it always will be. So money, it's a bit tight right now because of the book project, and that's a whole story. But, I mean, I kind of told the short version. That'll be making back its money over time, hopefully, but it doesn't have to. But yeah, once you've got safety, security, which I relatively do have, me and you and everyone else probably listening is already fabulously wealthy. The average man today eats like an absolute king of 2 years ago with just a few dollary dues and paper bucks that we throw around at the magical box store that sells us things you couldn't have imagined being available to us 50, 70, 100 years ago. They are. We are, in terms of stuff, we are incredibly wealthy just as an average person. So I'm extremely satisfied with all of that. I've done a lot of travel. Yeah, I'm an extremely satisfied person. You know, if a gigantic piano fell on me tomorrow, I want you to know today, you do not need to be sad for me.
I would have a lot of questions as to how that occurred, but I would also be happy for you and what you've achieved.
Thank you. I really don't want anyone listening or you to compare or contrast. Find your own priorities. Find your own feeling of purpose and meaning for your life. It has nothing to do with me. Except that we are ultimately universally connected and we can't avoid it. We do care about each other and we can't stop. Yeah. But your race is literally your race and my race is my race. There's no way that comparing them is fruitful in any way other than maybe a gentle sniff. Like, do you know what I mean?
I do.
I feel very accomplished and I'm in love with what I have done. And every time something I want to do comes up and it's within my range, I jump on it. Because that's kind of how I roll. I'm actually learning right now. I'm in my kind of semi-burnout, struggling with overwork era. And I look forward to crushing this as well. do you know what? I'm going to be so good at resting and so good at having balance. So good. Right?
Yeah. It's so interesting because I'm the same way where I see rest as like a thing to accomplish and a goal to be tackled.
It's hard.
It makes it, it sounds very backwards though, yeah. To think of like rest, the spirit of engaging rest almost feels like the opposite sentiment of not just like, I'm going to come at rest with all of my might and main, and I'm going to wrestle that bitch to the ground, and yep. I'm going to be amazing at rest,
yep.
Which is how I do that. Mm. And I think I hear that a little bit in what you're saying too.
Mm.
So many of my friends absolutely laugh at me when they hear that that is my perspective on, because I'm terrible at rest, and all of my friends will attest to that.
Mm.
I always have like 80 projects that I'm juggling, and none of them are finished, of course, because there are so many and because I am constantly picking new things up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, rest is almost this thing when I wonder if rest is something, as much as like there's a purposeful engagement in cultivating a place where rest is part of our system, if there's a surrendering or a submissive element to rest.
Yeah, I think we're a huge challenge for us first world Westerners is I never stop entertaining myself or being distracted other than when I'm practicing my mindfulness practice, which is actually a lot. I mean, you know, dear listener, look at your own life. Have you been bored for more than 40 seconds this week? I doubt it. I really doubt it. But remember when you were a kid and how often you were bored? Yeah, a lot. Adult lives look very busy, intensely, incredibly, constantly busy, which is why a mindfulness practice is so vital in learning how to stop and slow down so that we're not constantly pushing and hurting ourselves. And I see the contradiction in that, but Ed, didn't you just say that you're kind of dealing with it, a burnout-y kind of era? Yes. I didn't, until it happened, I wasn't aware that I had these limits. And so I'm learning and I'm listening.
Something that I just remembered when you were saying that is this morning, for the first time in what feels like several weeks, if not several months, the first thing that I did when I woke up this morning was not to look at my phone.
Yeah.
And the fact that I have to say that as something that stands out as a huge landmark event, first of all, strikes me in this moment as deeply depressing.
Oh, try not to judge it.
No. Yeah, exactly. Not in a shaming sort of way, but in a sense of that is the fact that that's remarkable makes me stop and realize that it's so prevalent.
Yeah.
TV. I didn't check my phone for messages. Exactly. Didn't go on YouTube, didn't check social media, didn't see how many emails I needed to delete from my inbox. I got up, I took a shower, I went on a long walk. Mm. I didn't even listen to music. It was weird. But it was beautiful and I felt so energized. Mm. Yes, I would highly advocate for that sort of rebellious disconnection.
100%.
Participation on rest.
Me too. Have you ever turned your phone off and gone out without it lately?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Not lately, but I have.
Oh, okay. It's hard to do.
So I should. You know, it is in some senses. I think there's that fear. There's the fear of missing out because we're so used to being reachable and connected at any moment, any time of the day.
Yeah.
There's this sense of if I'm not connected, something's going to go wrong, or I'm going to miss something important, or like, what if something happens to me? How will someone get in touch, or how will I get in touch? But I don't know, maybe there's just something about the dependence on that constant connection, the technology aspect.
Where the sacrifice is never turning off, right? Never exactly. Lowering our alertness and readiness for anything stimulating.
Ugh, it's so sad. But there's so much beautiful humanity when one does that.
Yep.
I never regret turning off my phone and even just leaving it at home and going on my, like I usually take my phone with me on my long walk so that I can track my steps for the day.
Mm.
But a couple of times I've intentionally left it at home. And it's so interesting how like almost giddy, I feel, you know, like as a kid when I like snuck out of the house mom and dad were looking, and I'm just kind of like rubbing my hands together and chuckling,
so
like I've
naughty.
Done something mischievous.
You're off grid. You're off grid.
Exactly. No one can find me. Oh my goodness. That is such a real thing, though. I remember a few years ago, I was working at a university, and one of the things that I did most frequently to kind of disconnect, or I was in the beginning of my crazy exercise phase, was I would go to the pool and I'd swim. And there was this moment when I first dove into the pool. I didn't have my phone on me, but I was like, no one can find me.
Mm.
Nobody can touch me down here. Like I'm underwater. I'm just swimming around. If there was an emergency, like if someone tried to contact me via the helpline or my boss tried to harangue me with a bunch of texts, I'm untouchable. I am invincible in the water. And that is such an amazing feeling. And I really want everybody to find a way to experience that in their own space, however they can, because it's dangerously addictive. I say dangerously, it's beautifully addictive.
It's nice to get addicted to a healthy habit for a change, right?
Yes.
I think I know the feeling you're talking about, and I think I'm going to use that as well. I close my eyes and imagine myself, sitting, you know, when you breathe out and your body goes down to the bottom of the pool and you can sit on the floor for a while.
Oh, that's so good.
I've never closed my eyes and imagined I was there, but continuously breathing as well. But I think I'm going to do that for my next, 10 minutes just downtime sitting practice.
I'm going to try that too. That sounds so tranquil.
It sounds so nice, right?
It really does.
Shut up. Let's go. Let's turn all this off. Let's do it, goodbye.
Everyone, we're going to go. See ya. I'm just going to be, we're going to breathe underwater for about 10 minutes. It's fine. God, that's one superpower that I honestly would love to have though.
Mm.
I would 100% love to be able to just disappear underwater and breathe. It would be so beautiful.
Maybe get into scuba.
I actually kind of have been thinking about that. So you never know.
Cool.
Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit into some gay questions.
Ooh, gay questions.
These are different from the zany questions, which I have lined up for later. Mm. But to pull some questions from your question list, Ed, when, if ever, did you first realize that you were different? Or when did you first understand that you were gay?
Okay. I distinctly remember being approximately 6. You know magic cards, Magic the Gathering? There was a card called Blood Wall. There were Fire Wall, Water Wall, Different Wall, Bone Wall, and the spoilers. But Blood Wall. And it was this girl, and she was like resting her head into this fleshy wall. And I had a dream, but it was a gigantic, like the head of a penis. And I remember being about 6.
That the wall is the head of penis?
Yeah, the wall is made of a fleshy, warm blood wall of head of penis, like head of erect penis. And somehow I was like a tiny ant and the penis was enormous. So I was like leaning into and relaxing into. It felt deeply peaceful. You know how when you cuddle a guy and there's just no stress, no pressure, it just feels right? I had a dream like that. And something about it, I knew it was a penis. Somehow it was a penis and it just felt really right. So that was one thing. I also fell in love with Simba about the same time.
Yes. Who can say that they have not fallen in love with Simba?
I'm not sure that everyone falls in love with him to the depraved depths that I have, but...
I think you'd be surprised. I think you would be surprised. I've had this conversation with so many people.
We all love Simba.
We do.
Do something you find like him a bit Simba? Hot?
I do. Okay. This is going to come back to one of our other questions, so I won't ask you this yet. But yes, I will answer yes. There's something about
great. Not just me,
the
then.
Whole. No, God.
He's
no,
so hot and so beautiful and so strong and so handsome. When I was about 6, I would dream that I was drinking a can of Fanta walking up the curb of my street. I lived on a little hill and I'd be stepping over the cracks because, of course, no one's allowed to break your back if you step on the cracks. And I was hanging out with Simba and he was just padding along beside me and we're just having great chats. All adult Simba, by the way. I don't have a thing for little young Simba, although I do love him. It's really a thing for adult Simba.
Yeah, those feelings are very different. That makes it much more okay. As long as he's an adult, we're fine. Yes. Okay, I'm gonna hold the rest of my thoughts on that one.
Because there's a future question? All right.
It is.
Everyone can hold their breath. I'm scared, but fine.
You should be so excited.
Oh, no.
So maybe it was teenage Simba, adult Simba.
Well, actually, one more thing. I was 11, 12. I remember getting my first pube and I was like, oh my God. So I plucked it out. But then around that era, God damn it, Drag Race. I remember being in year 7 and there was another feeling, a distinct feeling of like differentness it just felt like differentness. Maybe it was because I wasn't making a ton of friends, or I didn't like football in the way the other boys did, or, you know, I wasn't surrounded in a tight social circle. I had my nerdy friends, you know, we played Digimon or whatever. And that's kind of my truth. Oh my God, I still have a Digimon today. It's so good. But
a Digimon is that a digital Pokemon?
It's a little digital monster in a tiny little matchbox size game thing with 3 buttons. You can battle them. They're like Tamagotchis for boys who like to fight, you know. That's me. Okay. I'll have to battle them. I'll have to win.
Yes.
Yeah, but I remember feeling, oh, I actually am different. And that was a kind of deeper, heavier, darker kind of different feeling. And it was year 7, you know, or 11 turning 12 that I felt that way. Okay. And it was also related to being gay, but it was kind of a bigger, wider feeling of difference and problems.
Okay. And you describe it as darker mainly because it was there something about it that you identified as, was it shamefully dark?
Yeah, the gayness.
Was it dark because you didn't understand it, or what was?
No, because I knew it was. I feel differently to other boys. I like boys, and other boys don't. And I knew what that was at that age. You could go up to any 12-year-old; they know.
I would not have known. I would have been like, "What are you talking about?"
Fair enough. And if that intrigues you, listeners, go back one episode.
Yes. Unwrap Me Like an Onion and you will find a lot of weird stuff in there.
Mm. Do imagine today going up to 12-year-olds. It's 2023, but what do you think will happen? Go up to a 12-year-old and be like, hey, just out of curiosity, are you gay, or do you like boys or girls or what? You might get the childish response of like, oh, ew, yuck, feelings and love, like, ew, no, I don't like anybody. But I bet you'll find a certain element of gay. No, like, no way. I'm definitely not gay. That they won't be like, yeah, I'm totally straight. They'll just be like, I'm definitely not gay. So that is all I need to know.
Maybe. I do kind of wonder about that, actually. I've seen, I don't know if this is just the algorithm preying on my subconscious, but I've seen a lot of interviews with children, whether it's a psychologist or a sociologist or somebody who is interviewing children about, for example, in some of the states here that have been...
The Don't Say Gay states?
Yes, where they've been banning books from libraries and removing
gay content,
LGBTQ material from access so that kids can't read them. They're interviewing the children who's like at the schools where these are happening, and the children are having some really profound reflections on sexuality and identity and even just the things that are happening in politics that are so far...
Mm.
You would think perhaps because of their age that it's so far above what's happening with them in their own lives that they wouldn't really have a lot of connections to it.
Leaks down all the time.
Yeah, but they do have the capacity not only just to say, oh, this is a book that I read and now it's gone, but they're critiquing the politicians and they're critiquing the philosophies behind the book bans.
Mm.
And they're coming back with, you know, like, talking about inclusion and... the importance of being connected to yourself and being true to yourself. And the children, some of them are as young as 7 or 8 years old.
Mm.
So part of me, and, you know, not all of them are identifying as part of the queer community either. So part of me wonders maybe if there's something about this upcoming generation where maybe I would have said as when I was 10 or 12 or 11 or so, that would have certainly been my peers' reaction of like, oh, no, got to keep away from that. That's weird. That's gross.
Mm.
But I see now kids, at least the pockets of children that I see around me, that they're starting to have like scarily adult level conversations. They're so aware.
100%. And I see it too. And I am happy. It is very positive mm-hmm. change. I still want to see more like, it's always Jack and Jill. Even Frozen, take Frozen. I'm a big fan. They went with sisterly love instead, and they even did the whole illusion in Frozen 1. You'd think the prince would, and the love's true kiss, and then it turns out like the true love was the sister saving the other sister. That's an act of true love that broke the spell. Then it's still Kristoff and Anna. Like, it's still male-female. Everything except a fraction, and a very much growing fraction, is still straight. And so, you know, all the naysayers are always like, you're throwing the gay down our throats. Dude, our throats are completely and utterly plastered in heterosexuality already.
It's true. It really is.
Do you know how much heterosexuality was pounded down my throat?
So much heterosexuality.
Yeah. Yes. Completely fist fucked through my fucking throat.
Oh, absolutely. I was shafted with so much heterosexuality. I was dripping with that shit.
Even supportive.
Work.
Yeah, that's true. Even very intelligent, supportive, loving people like my brother have argued with me and continue. I haven't spoken to him about it lately, but continue to argue. Kids don't see sexuality. It's not relevant. I'm like, I think that, yes, I see where you're coming from. But when there's never Jack and Jack, there's never Jill and Jill, it's always Jack and Jill, that matters. And they see that. Mm. They understand prince plus princess equals correct or normal or regular. But for us queers, but it also benefits everybody, being aware of diversity and the natural prevalent existence of queer people harms nobody and is extremely cathartic to the young kids that are otherwise going to have a massive identity crisis.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, it's so crazy to think that there's this fear that somehow it does harm to know about it.
Yeah.
Like, what's the worst that you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
Your kid's going to turn out to be gay? Well, why is that a problem? What's
exactly
what danger are they in?
That is the problem, Charlie.
It's
there's an amazing 4-panel webcomic, which is the little boy holding his mum's hand. And I don't know, he sees Elton John or something on TV. She's like, "No, Timmy, shield your eyes." And the next panel is like, "It's too late." And he's like dressed up in this fabulous like disco outfit with like, you know, ostrich feathers and everything. He's like, "I've seen it all, mummy."
Oh my God. Can you imagine?
It's so good.
Oh, that's... I kind of like it. I understand what that's all about, but part of me is just like, I'm obsessed with that. I need to find that immediately, blow it up and plaster that everywhere.
I'll find it for you. You can put it on your Insta. We'll both put it on our Instas afterwards.
Okay. We'll have to do it at the same time though.
So yeah, sure.
Everyone finds it.
Great. Everyone between me and you, we're plugged into everybody.
Yes. Nice. 6 degrees from us. Oh, that's delightful. Let's see. Moving into relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk relationships. Mm-hmm. Specifically, mm-hmm. because you're in the hot seat, we're gonna dig into you.
Yep.
Is there anything about your relationship, or perhaps past relationships, your love life, your journey into the relationship you have now? You know what? Let's narrow that scope a little bit. Let's bring it to your relationship now.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that surprised you? Anything that has surprised you about?
It constantly surprises me that it's happening at all. Maybe I'm in a bit of a feisty mood today or whatever. I'm a little bit grumpy. Woke up grumpy. I've had a grumpy day. I also had a really nice lunch, but
it's the post-lunch coma. You're just sleepy.
I'm definitely a bit feisty. So it surprises me constantly at all, because I remember being a kind of already jaded 17-year-old who'd cried himself to sleep many nights thinking my life was over and fucked because I was gay and all these problems, blah, 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 blah. But that the guy that I found you know, I hit on many guys unsuccessfully and some successfully for a long time. And then I was 23 and there was just one more and he seemed lovely, but it worked out. And it continued to work out, and it was far easier and more pleasant than my previous two relationships. And it just kept being that way. And we kept evolving and growing together and growing closer and constantly enjoying it. And we've overcome every hurdle. There have been many hurdles, but the hurdles never seem to be interpersonal. There have been some. And we've definitely conquered those as well, and we continue to. And the fact that this is happening at all still shocks me, and I'm still grateful every single day that I found a love that feels almost effortless and extremely rewarding. You know, everyone says like the one, but I'm a big fan of Dan Savage saying the 0.89 or the 0.93. I can't believe I found a 0.98, and he feels the same way about me. And he only lived a couple of kilometers from my first share house. And I was there wondering, well, running the numbers on the gays, like, and I'm a very particular gay, and I really only like a certain select kind of gay, and how am I ever going to meet the right guy? It's just statistically unlikely. Yeah, he wasn't far away at all.
Those are some good odds. Wow.
Yeah, I'm shocked and surprised pleasantly every day. And I want people to know that I did not see it coming. I wasn't expecting it. It did happen. It continues to happen. You know, our relationship may end. Everything may be over in a year. I don't know. I don't want it to, but we'll see.
I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not, but I'm not going to force it. I think that's part of what makes our relationship so wonderful. It is borderline effortless. We just want to be together all the time. Mm-hmm. And when we've had enough of each other temporarily, we move away from each other. We give each other space and time. We just ask for it and we get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's so beautiful, actually. It sounds so – you used the word effortless. I imagine it takes a lot of effort to get to that place of comfortability and trust with one another, to where you can say, we understand each other, we have a rhythm, we have just the capacity to be like, you know what, I need to be my own person for a little bit. Mm. It's not because I don't like you or don't want you or you pissed me off.
Mm.
But you're able to not lose yourself in the other person. You can still be yourself, you can still have boundaries, you can still kind of push each other's buttons, and that's okay. That's not a frightening thing.
Yes.
We still have a good relationship in those spaces.
Correct.
Mm, love that.
I guess we also both have our own insecurities, but we have had so much open and honest, deep, soulful conversations and experiences that there's nothing really left that would ever shock either of us. And so we're constantly in a process of kind of holding space for whatever comes up next. You know, he's being extremely delightful and supportive as usual, while I'm struggling a bit with, I can't handle my usual workload. And he's been nothing but encouraging and supportive and delightful. And I feel guilty because I'm like, well, you got to work for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You know, like I got to hold up my end, and maybe there's some patriarchal condition bullshit in there. But he's like, no, just take a day off whenever you want. Take a half day off whenever you want. And I was like, oh, that's really helpful. Thank you.
That warms my heart so much, actually.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I hope that you find a love equally as good and easy and delightful. And I'm sure there was some effort. Like, don't get me wrong. There has been some effort. We do piss each other off. There's no two people that could possibly not. But yeah, I wish you every success in finding your version. That is equally delightful or more so for you.
Thank you. I received that. Keeping my fingers crossed for that as well. We're on the lookout. I actually did just today purchase, I don't know if you've seen this on social media or not, but there's the, what is it called? The pair ring or something, the dating experiment. Have you seen that?
No.
So I'm not sure who started it, which is certainly on me for not doing my due diligence. But apparently I'm now part of it. So, you know, just jumping in. But there's this company that has made this network. It's kind of like a push against dating app culture, where they're encouraging people to meet in real life, like have a meet cute in real life or something. But they have these rings that you can get And they have, they separate them. So like if you identify as straight or if you identify as gay, so that everybody can participate.
Slap that label on.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll wear mine. I don't mind. I'm very comfortable with my label.
Do it, do it.
Good for me.
Yeah. But they have these rings you can get and you wear them essentially out whenever you, you know, feel comfortable or you feel like you want to, so that you can identify, you can see if other people who have the rings
yeah,
on.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Through the app, start, right?
Yeah, you can start the conversations with them.
The zombies will swarm out of the gutters and be like, you're single, hello.
There's the ring, I see you.
Ah, the one ring.
Oh, God. See, part of me is like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. You know, there's
I'm into it. Sense of, see how it goes.
The other part of me, this is the, I suppose, the paranoid side of my personality too, is, oh, if somebody who is malicious or has malintent knows about it or is in the know enough to have the awareness to know what the rings mean, they can spot you if you're wearing it.
Yeah.
You can be picked off or at least picked out.
Yeah, but anyone can join Grindr and almost same thing.
That's true.
So that the danger factors seem very similar to the apps. Mm-hmm.
So I suppose that there's really no way to play it completely safe. But
do you know what, Charlie? Idea. Pause.
Yes.
There's no fucking way to be safe in life. And you know what? True. We're all guaranteed to die anyway. I'm not saying go take risks, but I'm saying get some real perspective. You're never going to achieve everything you want to without taking risks.
This is true. This is true.
Thank you.
I feel like that's something that I just need to like sit with and just soak in for a bit. That was very deep.
Marinade. Rub it all over yourself.
Mm. Mm. That's what we do. That's how we do. Changing gears just a tiny bit. Same general framework, but new flavor.
Understood.
What is a stereotype, like a gay stereotype that you see in yourself? Or do you see any stereotypes of a gay man in yourself? Maybe the way you behave or the way you think.
Yep.
Or the way you see yourself.
I think I got the Disney gene a bit. It's, the stereotype is that gay men like musicals and Disney. Yeah. Not all of them, but I do seem to like them a lot more than my regular nerdy straight friends. They like don't get that I like Frozen and I'm an adult man. I like Frozen 2 a lot. But maybe it started with The Lion King, or maybe it's because I'm a fag. Who knows?
I mean, why do you have to pick one thing? It can be all of these things together.
This topic does interest me, though, because I have always felt I don't have a lot of gay genes. I'm definitely 100% sexually gay. But I've often felt, I've actually come to find that like 95% of gays don't think that they personally fit in. So that's part of the coaching. but yeah, I genuinely feel as if like drag, I love RuPaul's Drag Race. I have no problem with drag, but like I never would have invented that. And why everyone loves pop idols and girl, powerful female role models. Nah, don't get that at all. Have a great relationship with my mom. She's more like a bit, or was and continues to be, I guess, it's changing, but emotionally available compared to my dad. Like, so I guess there's that, but I don't have a bad relationship with my dad at all. I like a lot of typically masculine pursuits and frankly, I hate expressing this out loud sometimes because there is a stigma against feminine dudes, but like that's my flavor and that's who I feel like I am. And I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't think that that does hurt anybody, but that's kind of my truth. I've come to realize for a long time, I questioned whether it was internalized homophobia and I'm just like, no, I'm a dude that prefers to be dudey around dudes and I like to have sex with dudes as well. Like duty dudes, it's just my truth.
Can you say duty dudes like five more times?
I like to do duty on duty dudes doodly. Every dude.
I did not mean to take away from what you were saying. I think I interrupted you, but I just
I still get tingles of self-consciousness. Like somehow it feels as if I'm doing something wrong or being arrogant, but I think just very occasionally I like to say that because it does seem to be true about me, and I just want my space in the gay community as well. without hurting or changing anybody else. But sometimes, you know, the first time I walked up into a gay bar in Perth, there is truly only one, there's one and a half gay institutions in Perth. And I walked up the stairs to the gay club, and this mincy little gay boy man was like, "You know, this is a gay club, right?" I was like, "Fuck me. Do you know how long I've wanted to come here and meet quote unquote my people? And you've just singled me out as looking and feeling like an outsider." Clearly,
that sucks. I don't.
Yeah. I got over it, but like, yeah, we got to make space for every rainbow dickhead out there, so including me. Thanks.
I love how this might lead into the next question, but that is kind of one of my favorite things about being a part of the gay community. I know I said this on the previous episode, or I suppose the exact opposite of what I'm about to say, but there's this kind of like the catty sort of taking jabs, you know, at people.
Yeah.
I think of the last episode, I said that that's something I was like not super excited about.
Yep.
It's like, oh, why do we do that? Why do we tear each other down so much?
Yep.
But right in this moment, I'm thinking there's something so liberating about knowing that I can call one of my gay friend, like I have a posse of gay guys who I'm in a friend group with.
You've got a swarm of gays? Awesome.
I have a swarm
you
of
have
gays.
You have a flutter of gays?
Was that the technical?
That's a handbag so of gays? I don't know.
A flamboyance of gays.
A strut of gays, yeah. Uh-huh.
We could go on.
A drool of gays?
A fleshy wall of gays.
A blood wall of gays. Yes. Nice. Nice.
Instant to the top.
You could do that with your friends, I suppose.
Not necessarily these friends.
No.
One or two. No. Where was I going with this?
Quick, close the curtain. We're seeing too much.
Privacy. Ah, oh, God. I showed too much.
Mm.
No, but I, you know, like we can use little jabs like that where I can call each other like, "Oh, bitch, what is going on with you, girl?" Or you know, I can call them a dickhead, or I can call them, I don't know.
You struggle, don't you? You don't have a potty mouth. You grew up a little angel and you're struggling to find your bad boy era. Yeah, I can still tell.
Here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
I've been practiced. That sounds so
childish. Just own it.
But I'm going to say it. I have been practicing a little bit more.
Swearing.
I do have a friend group. Actually, I learned this in college. One of my friends who I looked up to so much kind of began to pull that out of me, where he was like, "You know what, Charlie? There's a scientific study," and I don't know if he was completely bullshitting me or not, but I think I read it somewhere actually, where he said people who swear more are rated as being more trustworthy,
right?
Because they're not filtering themselves.
Yes.
They're not trying to couch everything in soft language. They're not trying to convey different meanings or be sneaky with their words. They're just very frank and open, and they don't mind the fact that they are frank and open.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going out of their way to hurt you, but they're also not afraid of presenting things without
sugarcoating,
you know, all the dressing. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So I have, and of course, maybe it was just because I was obsessed with him, but I just kind of took that to heart and started kind of trying it on. And
yeah, nice.
I think a little bit vindictive now. I remember as a child, very young child, there was some kind of big gathering that we were having at my parents' house. And there was a bunch of people over and we were doing a potluck or something. And my mom was in the kitchen. I was at the counter. And there was another friend of my mom's also in the kitchen doing something with a dish. And she said, "Oh my gosh, like I think I smell something burning." So she ran into the kitchen and checked on her, whatever she was making. She was like, "Oh, it's fine. Everything's fine." And I remember sitting at the counter thinking, I want to try this out. Cause I guess I had been like premeditating saying this for some reason. Cause I knew it was like edgy in my household to say.
Uh-huh.
So she says, "Oh, everything's fine." And I said, "Oh, thank God." And that apparently was like so dangerous and rebellious. I remember my mom looked at me like she was going to stab me with a fork.
She
was pissed.
Oh, dear.
And so I had to course correct real quick. It was like, "Oh, thank God for the food. I'm so happy and thankful." And I said something stupid like that to try to like weirdly deflect from that moment.
Oh my God.
I remember like as time has gone by, I've pushed against that. And that sounds kind of silly to say that as an adult perhaps, but there's something a little bit, you know, there's something in me that feels kind of like sticking it to the man or the woman, I suppose.
Express yourself more strongly.
Exactly. Where I've used an edgy word, or I've used
Charlie, you sweet, sweet, sheltered little cherub boy dipped in filthy chocolate. you'll find your way.
I'm so much more salty than you think.
Oh,
I say that.
I don't doubt it. I look forward to it. When you're ready, in your own time.
Of course. Of course.
You we'll stupid dickhead.
Stop. That's so nice.
What's the next question?
Let's see. Ed, what is your favorite thing about being gay? Can be silly, can be serious, or like not serious perhaps, but.
I hope the people listening haven't heard this too many times, but once you have done your quote unquote gay work, you are an extremely liberated, powerful person. The challenge that being gay presents us in our era, I do mean that sincerely, the gift of getting your work done is so good. It will put you miles ahead of 99.9% of the population in terms of being well-adjusted, self-loving, and your ability to live what looks like and feels like a well-adjusted, loving, compassionate, kind, connective, powerful, beautiful human life. And here's the cake on the side is part of that is advanced sexual liberation. You know, I want to do little playful things that my partner doesn't necessarily have much of an interest in. Should that extinguish our relationship? Fuck no. It has nothing to do with not loving him that I want to do fun things on the side. And so we managed to, you know, land that plane, and it works extremely well. I just feel so sorry for everybody stuck in a heteronormative, standard, traditional type of situation that doesn't actually align with the human being that they are. But because probably they're suffering from buying into let's go along with the crowd. Let's do what everyone's always done. Let's agree with norms and standards and not listen to ourselves, and let's contort ourselves into an acceptable shape. Those people are trapped, and we don't have to be. Once you break the big rule and you come out as gay, everyone's like, oh, I guess all the rules are off the fucking table then. Like, have kids whenever you want in whatever way you want, I guess. It just will harass you politically. So, okay. Hmm. Well, that's okay. I can deal with that.
Right. That's the trade-off, I guess. That's, you know.
That's, yeah. It's worse in some places. You know, there's a lot of privilege in our conversation to be checked. We haven't been viscerally, loudly, but yeah, it's nowhere near this good at all in some very real places today.
Right. Yeah. I do have to remind myself.
It's great. It's great. But yes. I love it.
Gosh. Not to deviate too much from the seriousness of that, I continually reflect on how insanely bored I think my life would be to me, how boring my life would be if I were straight.
Mm.
I go through my day, I go out in the world, I ride the bus, I go to the store, looking around me, thinking like, I see, this is going to sound so judgy and catty, but okay, so it's fine.
Oh, apparently, maybe not.
I mean, maybe it sounds really edgy to me.
Try it on, try it on.
You're going to chuckle and you know.
Wrap that shawl around your shoulders, Charlie, and open your mouth. Here we go.
Where I see a straight couple, and first of all, my first reaction when finding out somebody is straight and not gay is just a little bit of disappointment. Actually,
yeah,
you know, I'm like, oh, I had such high hopes for you. Like, you know what? It's just, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe I don't know that your whole straight life would be boring, though. I think your spicy straight self would still be there, underneath the you know, facade.
Perhaps.
I'm certain maybe. That straight people are just as freaky as we are. It's just,
yeah,
they have all the more reason to stay in the freaky closet and be seemingly straight and regular. And we have run out of excuses after we had to come out or go crazy in most people's cases. You know, experiences may vary. And so we're kind of out of bigger excuses to not be freaky.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't That's it weird true. When you meet, like, have you met, who's that American politician guy Buttigieg? He's like Buttigieg? Gay. The only thing that's not regular traditional American God save the country or whatever saluting American is just that his partner's male.
Yeah, I can,
more
I
or less, just to be a bit reductive. Like, how disappointing is that?
I mean, yeah, it is a little bit.
If it's authentic and true, brilliant. Good luck to them. But I doubt it.
I'd be willing to bet that he must filter himself as a politician in order to make sure that he can do the work that he does. He is able to be a gay man and be out and open about it.
Yeah.
But he has to, for the ability to move successfully through the system.
Yeah.
Not because he doesn't.
I respect that. I know that I talked a bit meanly about it, but I feel sorry for his personal life. I hope that he's working it out in his personal life, because we benefit from visibility, and you know, heteronormative acceptable visibility is a form of visibility. So we're benefiting a bit.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm sure he's, I would hope that. I'm sure he's doing some work or asking himself questions.
But who knows?
Personally. I mean, someday maybe I'll knock his door down.
We won't have true equality until we have as many sleazy gay sex scandals in politics as we have sleazy straight sex scandals in politics. In the same way that we won't achieve equality amongst the genders until we have as many mediocre women in politics as we have mediocre men in politics.
That's such a weird way to gauge progress in some ways, too.
Well, it was a woman Australian politician who phrased it that way, and I really liked it. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Progress isn't just about getting the best women ever and shoving them at the top. It's about accepting that we are all mediocre, too.
It's about mixing more mediocrity of different kinds. We need more mediocrity that just looks different.
Well, equality is just equality.
That's true.
Nothing more.
Mm. I feel like that's another podcast we can do.
Of course.
All right, Ed, are you ready for some zany questions?
Oh, good. Yes. I was beginning to get worried about time, but yeah, brilliant. Unless there's any other hard-hitting deep ones. Did we do that one that you suggested that would be scary earlier? I think we were touching on furries or liking The Lion King.
Oh, yeah. That was the first one. It wasn't scary. It was more... half zany, half playful, half...
Oh, okay. Cool.
I was thinking, scary. Oh, my God. Did I have a scary question? You did kind of answer it already, but in your opinion, who is the sexiest Disney cartoon character?
Oh. God damn it. This is that question that it I is. Didn't want. Ooh. Okay. I have looked up things. You know, I know you listening. You have too. Don't judge me.
Exactly. Don't pretend to be so much better than you are. We know.
I've enjoyed many things. There's a lot of Disney Prince porn out there. I saw a particularly good one with Kristoff, and as I've been revealing, I do like Frozen. That one was quite modern and quite good. right now, yeah, him.
Okay.
I'll forever love The Lion King, but you know, the way I felt about Simba when I was 12, 13, 14, 15 or whatever is very different to how I feel about him now. But he remains an extremely sexy character. Just Google handsome Simba. Handsome adult Simba. Tell me I'm wrong. He's beautiful.
I can imagine. Yeah. We'll be doing that. Later tonight, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's about it. I look up a lot of illustrated art and cartoon and illustrated porn, and I love those romance stories and stuff like that as well. That does sometimes include furry characters, and some of them I do find extremely attractive. I'm a big fan of more of the Japanese style, where it's basically a man's body with maybe a tuft of hair or coloring here and there, but like an animalized head. I have a few of those books. They were some of the inspiration for my illustrated storybook, A Gay Man. They're not Disney characters, but I guess I wanted to tell everybody my dirty secrets.
There you go.
Yeah, there you
another one more reason to buy the book.
There's some pretty sexy things in there. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. I liked it.
Ooh. There is a kind of a soft BDSM furry nightclub dance, kind of daddy and scene. I liked it when the guy made it for me. Gummu Bear, shout out Gummu Bear. Find him on Instagram and probably Twitter or X, maybe Blue Sky. He did a great job. I was like, that's awesome. Could you just take the groin area down maybe 70%? He was like, oh, okay, sorry. I guess this is not a regular commission. I was like, this is going in a book for public consumption.
I'm sure he still has the original. He can
deal. Boost it up again.
A Gay Men After Dark edition.
Even personally, like for my happy times, I don't like the beyond hyper real stuff. It's just like, what? I don't know. It doesn't work for me anymore. I get it already, though. The illustrations of beautiful hunks are already hyper real. But then when their phalluses are like five times, I don't have that fetish. So I guess it just doesn't work for me.
Respect. I respect that. Let's see. I think I have a couple. They're mostly just like speed round. They're not all sexy questions.
Damn it.
I can pick up a couple.
No. Skip them. I've said enough.
Oh, let's see. Okay, this is a little whimsical. Which is more in alignment with your personality, blowing bubbles or skipping stones?
Ooh, skipping. Ooh, yeah. No por qué los dos. I'm gonna say skipping stones, but part of me is disappointed. So maybe it is blowing bubbles. You know what? I think it is blowing bubbles. Yeah, that feels more right.
Oh, I don't know why, but that's such a wholesome, beautiful image in my mind.
Well, I think I'm actually kind of a fun, crazy guy, actually.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that for you.
Well,
I can see that for you.
You know, this podcast and my businesses and coaching and life helpy stuff is all pretty serious. But actually, people definitely know me as a bit wild, happy to have a crazy conversation, happy to turn up the spice levels on basically anything. And that feels more like blowing bubbles than skipping stones. But I love a good stone skip as well.
Nice. If you were going to create a cologne or a perfume that somehow encapsulated you, encapsulated Ed-ness, what would you call it?
Pit. No. I said that because oh god, I say too much. I actually think god, you know how I said I have a confidence or self-love bordering on arrogance? This is another one of those. Yeah. I actually think my armpits smell pretty good.
I respect that.
I don't do That's anything crazy with it, but I'm like, I smell it. I'm like, yeah, I'm very pleased that is my musk. Because some dudes, it's not good.
Agreed.
I don't like my own musk, but I like it. I'm glad that it's mine.
I think you're allowed to like it.
So
that's
armpit.
Fine.
So wait, but the question was, what would I call it?
What would you call it? Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there would be a musky element to it.
Maybe fun bear? I don't know.
Fun bear.
Fun bear? That's so lame. armpit bear? No, it sounds too. I'm much more of like a sunny, happy-go-lucky kind of bear kind of guy. The bear trope has existed for several decades now, and I think generally it's considered to be like really rough and tough, but not necessarily. There should definitely be a cuter, more playful side alongside the roughness and toughness. I don't know. Pick your words from there. Lumber we'll bear, a, but not and happy.
We'll put this all the whole thing into a word cloud, and we'll just have it.
Yeah. Put that's the label on the bottle. Yeah. Good luck googling it.
Yeah. Can't wait to pick some of that up. I will say that's a real thing, though. Just to you know, I suppose to dip my toes in self disclosure. That's such a real attraction.
Ah, the smell, well. The musk.
It is. I'm a smell guy.
Are you, may I ask, are you an armpit pig?
Would you really
smell someone's smelly pits? Or do you just like their natural fresh sweat kind of flavor?
I don't know if I would necessarily go for like the really nastiness of it.
Yep, but you go halfway maybe, or you dip your toe. into the regular stuff.
I would. Yeah, I would be willing to admit that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think there's something about just that natural musk scent that I do find really attractive.
Yep.
And I'd be willing to say I'm into that.
Sexy men smell real good.
They do. Not everyone can pull it off, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
But when it's done well, like it's this really careful thing.
Are you just zipping up your gimp suit? Like there's a lot of noises.
Oh, was there a sound? Oh, sorry. I'm wearing a necklace and the clasp was scratching my neck.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. Yeah, please continue.
Realize that would be okay. Are you also into
gimp suits? No. No. I think a mild interest in furriness is just about as extreme as I get. I kind of like power play dynamics a bit. Yeah, I had a bit of a playtime with someone several weeks back, and he was pretty blokey. I think he was like a bricklayer, and he wanted to top me. I was like, nah, mate, I only do that with my boyfriends. He's like, come on. I was like, no. And he was like, yeah, but come on. And I was like, no. But then kind of our eyes connected and it became this playful kind of power thing. I really enjoyed this might sound like he was being really inappropriate and rapey and not listening to no means no, but it didn't escalate. But it became a pushy, shovey, kind of wrestly, sexy thing. It was really good.
Sounds fun. I mean, I'm glad that it was fun and it didn't turn creepy or rapey.
100%. You know, I was definitely very aware. I'm like, oh, that's very inappropriate of him to not just accept my no. But it became something very playful and I didn't have to like put my foot down and say, get the fuck out of here or I'm getting the fuck out of here. It remained playful and he remained respectful, but like sexually expressive, you might say, but I felt very comfortable letting it continue and it was fun.
Yeah. Well, when there's that, when you understand the boundaries for sure and you're both on the same page, that is kind of hot. There is something fun about that.
Mm.
So I hear you.
It's such a strange situation that a lot of transgression as well is kind of hot to a lot of people. You know, the whole daddy thing or stepson or stepsister or totally not my dad. You know, almost none of us are interested in actual incest, but it's an extremely searched term and topic and porn interest. And the transgressiveness of it is appealing. So, yeah, that guy not necessarily taking my no respectfully and turning it into a wrestling match was fun.
It sounds fun.
Stop.
See, now the please. Yeah. Oh, damn it. See, now the academic nerd in me is like, I wonder if someone's done a research study on that because I want to read it.
Find out. Let us know in the next episode of Charlie Never Leaves Gaberhood.
We'll be breaking down academia in the gay community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Specifically around daddy issues.
I listen to Gayish podcast. Shout out to Mike and Kyle. They do a great job. They have Gator and they have a research component to every single episode, basically. They do the history of a word or a concept or of a thing. So much more than my show, it's more informative, data-driven in parts, but then usually it breaks down for the majority into something like this.
Yeah. I'm going to tuck that away.
So you could bring it in. Okay. And we'll just copy Gayish and then we'll usurp their tens of listeners. they definitely have 10 to the, my listeners are roughly 10 and they probably have to the power of 10, whatever that is. I actually don't know what that is. Is that 100 or 1,000?
I think so. Yeah, it's 100.
Okay. They definitely have thousands of listeners, but I don't think they're into the like 50,000s yet.
No.
Mm.
Well, it's because they don't talk about what we talk about. We are their missing spice.
Cool.
Something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
But anyway, full disclosure, I think they do a great job. They're not everyone's cup of tea, obviously, but yeah, I really think they're nice. I still listen to them.
But, all right, speed round. What's something that you want to say you're interested in, but you are really not?
Oh, great question. Oh, there's so many, but none are coming to me immediately. I get that vibe. Cooking. Cooking, all kinds of art and creativity. maybe home decor or like I'm really fucking not. Taking care of plants.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Feeding the poor.
I really want to say that I'm a humanitarian, but
yeah. It's just not true. I am interested, but not that much. Sure. I hope that was enough. I could probably write down a thousand of those.
No, I think I gotcha. Gotcha. Super strength or super speed?
Speed. It just has so many more applications. I find the super strength thing like sexier, but super speed would be so much infinitely more useful. Oh, what else are you going to do? If you can lift up mining trucks? Like, what are you going to do with super strength? I don't know.
Yeah. I see that. I agree.
Mm.
Okay. If you were a cult leader, what's one bizarre or weird rule that you would make all your followers obey?
You mean I'm not a cult leader?
Are you? Is this about to get super meta?
Well, what the hell is a life coach? No. Definitely not a cult leader. We meet on Tuesdays. sorry, what was the final part of the question? What's the weird ritual?
Yeah, what would you make everybody do?
Oh,
who's part of your cult?
I have a little party hat that has like tails or legs down the side. It's a bear. It's like a fuzzy bear with ears cap. Everyone would have to have an animal themed like headdress thing. It's like the US Capitol riots shaman guy. It's like his, ooh. I think he had like a bull type thing.
He did. Yeah. He had the horns.
Yeah. Everyone has to have one of those. I definitely love animal paraphernalia. I think it's definitely tied to my, what I keep calling my mild interest in furries. Yeah.
Sounds like it's growing.
Love animal bullshit and paraphernalia. Yeah, definitely. I might even go Hindu just to like, you know, have Ganesh and whatnot. Just be closer to me.
Nice.
But particularly bears.
Specifically, would bears be yours, or would you also wear that, or would you just make everyone else wear that?
Oh, 100%. Why do you think I'm brown by coaching? No, it's just me. Oh, yeah. Absolutely love bears. Nice.
Would you let anyone else wear bears, though? Or would you?
Yeah, of course. I would internally doubt their worthiness, but I'd allow it.
Well, that's part of moving up through the cult, though, right? Is that eventually.
Right. I could gatekeep it.
You could gatekeep it.
Yeah,
exactly.
No one's worthy.
Exactly. I mean, that's the mark of a good cult there, right? Is that nobody's good enough except you.
There's got to be rules. There's got to be a lot of complex rules.
Exactly. Well, then you could put, never, nope, I'm not going to say that.
All right. Stay tuned next week for when maybe Charlie tells you what that was.
Oh, gosh. You're going to break me open, aren't
you? Audience retention. No, keep going. I'm nearly out of time. I've got to go in a couple
that's
minutes.
Okay. This is my last one.
Nice.
Besides Australian,
yeah.
Because that seems fairly obvious, what's the sexiest accent?
Oh, I see how you've inserted yourself there. no, I actually do think the Australian accent is kind of sexy.
Good.
When done right, when it really feels natural, because a lot of guys force it, or it can be forced very easily. When it comes off naturally, it's very pleasing. It's kind of this soft, tender masculine. Yeah, anyway. I have always been interested in languages and I would love to hear people's accents. So for me, the answer is kind of many. I almost want to say German, but then there's this funny nerdiness about it that makes me say, nah, right at the end. Mm. I don't hate American in terms of sexiness, but it is a bit tainted because, you know, you're 90% of all pop culture and it's not new or fresh.
Fair enough.
My family's English and I have kind of withdrawal symptoms with the UK and that's a complex mess. South African's a big no. Too many scarring experiences with very direct South Africans having no concept of what a PC discussion is. That's its own podcast. Yeah, God, it's something European, not quite German, definitely not Dutch, as we all know. The Dutch accent is by far the worst.
Do you know why? Is that just, am I the only one who doesn't know why that is a thing?
Oh, let's just listen to them. Shout out Dutch people. I love you. I love Grubby, the ex-Warcraft 3 world champion. I'm a big gamer. Didn't come up today. He's Dutch. I'm going to go with Mongolian, actually. Have you actually heard a Mongolian accent in English?
You know, I don't think I have.
It's quite different to other Asian languages. It's very pleasant. I like it.
All right. Well, I'm going to look that up as well.
Check it.
I feel like every time we talk, I have a list of things that I follow up with after the podcast.
Well, you are the sheltered, beautiful Christian nubile child dipped in rainbow chocolate trying to find his pack of cigarettes. So there's a lot of research for you
That's
to be getting
very
on
very interesting image of myself to look out in the mirror.
Well, I guess you vomited the rainbow ice cream one day. You're like, oh, no, mummy, it's inside of me too. Oh, my God. And she's
oh my God.
Stab you with a fork.
Fuck you. Up, but I will do it so Christianly.
All right, my dude. This is a lot of fun. I got to roll. Is there anything else you want to say?
I think that was mainly it. Thanks Brilliant. For being in the hot seat and for sharing all the things.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for interviewing me. We'll see what we come up with next time. I wouldn't be surprised if you're still on this podcast at some point in the near future.
I mean, I will keep myself open. Sounds
good. Remain open, Charlie. I will too.
Always.
Cheers. 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 Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Alrighty. Did you survive the last 90 minutes of me, mostly me, talking about me? How much fun was that? I'm editing this a week later, but I know that I shared some personal stuff in there. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't judge me. I won't judge you. Wouldn't that be nice? Wherever you are, wherever you're listening, congratulations on making it through such a long episode. I can only imagine that we are just intimately closer than I perhaps will ever know, because no one emails me at edward@capehoodpodcast.com. But if someone ever should, you know that I'm going to remark about it. So if you want to solidify your space in history, send me an email, tell me your thoughts or updates or questions or suggestions, and somehow they'll make their way into the next show. But until then, stay fabulous. Be awesome. Take very good care of yourself. Have a lovely fortnight. Until I see you again. Take care. Bye. Mm-mm.